Hello and welcome to PharmaLex Talks podcast. Today I'm speaking with medical devices expert Yevhen Chichian about the changing nature of software in a medical device, as well as software as a medical device. Classification and regulation around medical device software has become more complex, and in recent years, most regulatory authorities have tightened the regulatory pathways. We will be talking about software differences and classifications, as well as key considerations for companies. Yevhen is Director, Team Lead Medical Devices, IVD, in Australia at PharmaLex, and he has worked in the medical devices field for more than 20 years. His expertise lies in regulatory strategic planning, particularly in the US, Europe, Canada, Australia, and New Zealand. He is an expert in product development and design controls, specifically in software and electrical technologies. Welcome, Yevhen, and thank you for taking the time to share your knowledge with our audience.
Hello, Kim. Yeah, thank you for the introduction.
Let's begin by looking at some of the major differences between software as a medical device, or SAMD, and software included within a medical device. What are some examples and how do they impact the regulatory classifications?
Thanks. Well, the main considerations are whether it's a hardware device with software embedded in it or standalone software that is a medical device in its own right. The first example might include a medical device that is running an IVD test or a programmable system in a physical device, or software that is incorporated in a medical device or interfaces with the hardware in some way from a laptop or desktop computer. All of these will be regulated in the same way as standard medical devices. So software as a medical device will be software that has a medical purpose, but it's standalone and typically analyzes information and provides that to a healthcare professional. The classification of these will be based on the device's clinical use or what part it plays in a patient's treatment. So the sort of things that would be considered medical devices as standalone software would be applications to analyze, say, radiological images, analyze pictures from a mobile device to measure wounds, or analyze skin anomalies, or take physiological parameters, transmit them and manipulate them and the data in some way in order to assist healthcare professionals with decision-making. So things which are not normally considered SAMDs would be software that have no therapeutic purpose, such as wellness living apps on your mobile, software used to monitor sleep quality, health information registers or logging applications, or software for resource management planning patient visits. A good way to determine if a product is a SAMD is to ask questions such as, does the software have a medical purpose? Does it simply transmit patient information from one software to another without manipulating or analyzing the data? If it does anything that's outside of that very limited scope, it's likely to be software as a medical device. The second question would be, do individual patients benefit from the use of that software?
Thank you, Yevhen. If a product is considered to be an SAMD, how is it now classified? Let's maybe look at some examples in the EU, Australia, and the US.
Okay, let's start with Europe, where the medical device regulations, which come into force in May, which came into force in May 2021, include the four classes of medical devices: Class 1, 2A, 2B, and 3. And the majority of the classification rules from the MDD are maintained. However, under the new software-specific classification rule, Rule 11 in Annex 8, the majority of software devices now likely will fall into Class 2A and above. The big implication with this ruling is that software will have to be constructed in a way that can be exposed to regulatory scrutiny by a notified body before it can be released onto the European market. So the change has been a significant one in terms of regulatory burden that will be placed on the software developer or device manufacturer and whoever places it on the market. The other consideration is that there may be instances where the software turns out to be class one, which means that you can self-certify that piece of software. That means while you can't miss out any steps to do with risk management or usability engineering or other requirements, you won't need to have the product scrutinized by a notified body. In Australia, the Therapeutic Goods Administration have made some changes for classification of standalone software in recent times, which are very much in line with the way the classification framework proposed by the International Medical Device Regulatory Forum, or IMDRF, which places some in a lower class and some in a higher class, depending on the way information is presented and informs clinical decisions by the physician or the patient. There's a big distinction with the TGA between the way the rules are applied if the device is patient use or used by a healthcare professional. In addition, the essential principles, which are all about safety of the device, have been updated within the TGA regulations, placing great emphasis on the things like cybersecurity and the way labeling is handled, since now this can be delivered through about or help screen on an app. The US has a different way of handling software devices. Generally, the highest class, class 3, would require the FDA to do a pre-market approval for the device. However, if the product code and the predicate similar device is identified, then the software may fall into a class 2 classification, where you would do either a notification to the FDA for a 510K clearance, which is demonstrating the equivalence of your software to some other software that's previously been on the market, or a de novo if a predicate or product code cannot be identified. Some low-risk software may be class 1 devices which just get listed, but you do have to be registered with the agency. So generally speaking, classification has that hierarchy in all territories, but there are subtle differences. It's very important to understand them if you're going into, say, multiple territories with your device.
That obviously does create some complexities for companies. The other aspect to this is the key considerations for medtech companies to ensure their software development is compliant with the regulations. What processes and standards must companies adhere to as they develop their solutions?
Yeah, that's a very important question. Since software has unique requirements for establishing the development processes, firstly, there's a software lifecycle process standard, ISC 62304, which not only provides the requirements of the deliverables and documentation that needs to be generated, but also defines the processes, the activities, and tasks at various stages of the development lifecycle. These activities include software development planning, software design, software testing, configuration management, issue management, and maintenance once the software is released. Since the standard doesn't prescribe a particular software development methodology or technique, developers can apply iterative design, such as agile methods, which allows, you know, for tweaks and changes and can accelerate development while meeting regulatory standards. Also, many verification validation activities are unique to software, where testing needs to be specific to an operating system. While regulators have identified that the platform itself is not part of the medical device, the manufacturer still needs to demonstrate that the software does operate on the specified operating system or platform. So, as part of the specification, it's critical to identify the target platform and specify that in the labeling instructions for use, and define a validation envelope for the product to be tested. Those verification and validation activities do need to comply with the ISO 13485 design control processes and be integrated with the manufacturer's quality management system. Another important lifecycle consideration is around post-market activities. And there are a few specific considerations that must be incorporated within the software design and QMS, such as issue management, vendor reporting, complaints, recurring problem resolution, quality assurance, customer feedback, and performance quality metrics. It's accepted that software, there will be bugs, patches, and updates. The important thing is to do a risk assessment of the various changes that are identified during the life of the software and incorporate them within the QMS and demonstrate that any issues are dealt with adequately. Information security also must be addressed by monitoring your vulnerabilities and threats, especially when you have third-party software.
Thank you for that, Yvan. Let's look at some of the specifics with regards to managing oversight of your products, particularly with regards to the quality management system. What special considerations need to be made when implementing a QMS for a company producing software medical devices?
Demonstrate you're compliant with all these different regulations. You're going to require a QMS built to the medical device QMS standard, which is ISO 13485, as mentioned. And if you are going to supply to multiple territories, you'll need to make sure that you understand what the QMS requirements are in each of these territories. The regulations in Europe and Australia expect manufacturers to have established a QMS. However, it depends on the class of device where the system needs to be certified. Class 1 devices aren't required to be certified. However, both in Australia and Europe, any manufacturer that has software that is Class 2A and above needs to have a certified QMS according to ISO 13485. So different territories have different requirements around general safety and performance, including things like risk management, clinical evaluation, cybersecurity, and post-market surveillance. But you can't really start any of these processes until you have a QMS in place to demonstrate that you've gone through all the required steps effectively and that you have a way of gathering information once a product is released. So QMS considerations need to be defined upfront for the software design process. This is critical since software development focuses heavily on the processes rather than the output. It is very difficult once you develop software to then turn around and decide what you need to do for the QMS. There are some differences within the QMS that need to be considered with software. Obviously, subsystems within a QMS like inventory, say warehousing and physical transport to manufacture don't apply. But things like supply management do. If, for example, you're using subcontractors for software development and purchasing third-party code. An advantage with standalone software is you can more easily manage change control for post-market surveillance through automation. So many parts of the QMS will be easier to achieve than with a hardware device.
SAMDs and even software in a medical device are clearly enabled by digital innovations. With that in mind, what considerations need to be made for medical device software incorporating artificial intelligence and machine learning?
Yeah, AI and machine learning are hot topics, and it seems many medical devices have some level of artificial intelligence these days. The FDA has been very busy since 2019 releasing a regulatory framework on artificial intelligence and machine learning-based SAMDs. Its focus is ensuring that there is a predetermined change control plan as part of the pre-market submissions. So if algorithms are changing in the field, they need to have a particular pre-specification and an algorithm change protocol to manage those changes. Or there needs to be a pre-release validation plan that ensures that the algorithms are validated prior to release. The emphasis now is around good machine learning practices and ensuring that the organization has a culture of quality. Again, the QMS becomes essential to managing the way algorithms are trained, validated, released, and monitored in the field. There's been some activity in recent times in various other regions too. The IMDRF released some consultations and are working extensively in this area to release some guidance documents on AI-based medical devices and definitions. South Korea has some guidelines on AI technology in Korean, and Singapore released some guidance documents too, as did China as recently as last year. So AI machine learning software and their unique capabilities are increasingly being considered by regulators globally.
Thank you for joining me today, Yvan, and thank you for sharing your insights with everyone. Thank you also to our listeners. I hope you take some valuable information from this episode and apply it in one way or another to your business. Please make sure you subscribe so that you can join us for future podcasts.